We'll call this meeting of the Commerce Consumer Protection, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Representative Clark, thank you for joining us this morning. Members, thank you for joining us. I know this is a after-deadline hearing, and it's not always people's favorite thing to do. And being that the weather is beautiful, people would probably prefer to be outside right now. But Representative Clark has been very persistent and very in sharing a number of substantive arguments in favor of GMO labeling. We've been talking over the course of the session, and she's persuaded me to hold an informational hearing on this relatively intriguing topic for members of the Commerce Committee, which is where labeling bills go. It is, again, an informational hearing only at this point to sort of tee the issue up. We've allocated, I believe, Mr. Kwapik, about 15 minutes for the overview of in support of the bill and an equal amount of time for those if there may be opposition to the bill. The second item that we have on the agenda today is with respect to the lottery and certain things that they can and can't do. That is an action item, however. So at about 9:15, 9:20, we'll be turning to that issue for those that are here with respect to the to Representative Lincheski's bill. With that, Representative Clark, House File 3140 is on our agenda this morning, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I really happy that you're here today. This is a bill about the basic right of consumers to know what's in their food, whether or not their food contains genetically modified compounds. So what I want to start with, Mr. Chair, is tell you I have selected three witnesses, and I know there's a fourth witness also that wants to testify in support of the bill. I have not talked to that person, but I want Minnesota to take its place among the other three and now four states that do require labeling of genetically modified foods. Again, this is a labeling bill. It has nothing to do with banning any sorts of foods. It's talking about the consumer's right to know. So it's very appropriate as before this committee. Just by way of background, there are at least 64 countries, including U.S. major trading partners, that require GMO labeling, and the opinion polls show that Americans really do want to have GMO foods labeled. The American Public Health Association, American Nurses Association endorsed this labeling. The Farmers Union also endorses it, and there's a letter that will be circulated for you to look at for that from the Minnesota Farmers Union. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to get right to the witnesses because they have lots of expertise and can provide the information the committee may want. We also have a treat coming for our second witness.
Thank you, Representative Clark. And if you just identify yourself for the record, proceed. And welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Riddle. I own and operate Blue Fruit Farm in Winona area and serve on the board of Right to Know Minnesota. I also serve on the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Citizen Board and as an elected supervisor in the Winona County Soil and Water Conservation District. I just want to make it clear that my remarks are not offered on behalf of MPCA or the SWCD. According to a recent report from the USDA Economic Research Service, and I quote, U.S. consumers eat many products derived from GE crops, largely unaware that these products were derived from GE crops. Despite the rapid increase in the adoption of corn, soybean, and cotton GE varieties, questions persist regarding their economic and environmental impacts, the evolution of weed resistance, and consumer acceptance. And those are direct quotes from the ERS report. The report also documents significant increases in the cost of seeds since the introduction of GMOs, as well as increases in herbicide use, herbicide-resistant weeds, and insecticide-resistant pests. The report also contains a very interesting table summarizing research documenting consumers' willingness to pay more for non-GMO foods, which is attached to my testimony. But the question before us today is, why should the state of Minnesota require that foods containing GMOs be labeled? Well, GMOs are novel, patented organisms that have never before been part of nature or part of the human diet. And under the substantial equivalence doctrine adopted by federal officials in the early 1990s, GMOs are not subject to human health safety testing or labeling prior to their release. And without mandatory labeling, it's impossible to understand the public health impacts or conduct epidemiological research on GMO foods. Since GMOs have been introduced, scientific research has shown some disturbing results, including researchers at the University of Minnesota have attributed the decline in monarch butterfly populations to the widespread planting of GMO crops. Research in Indiana has shown that GE toxins in the BT corn persist in the soil and water and cause mortality among aquatic organisms. According to researchers in Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois, corn rootworms have developed resistance to the BT toxins in the GMO corn, leading to an increase in insecticide use and increased cost to producers. Research in Iowa has established that GMO soybeans contain high levels of glyphosate or Roundup, while non-GMO soybeans contain no such residues, and now this glyphosate residues are being found in human breast milk, so they're accumulating in the body. Research has shown that female hogs fed GMO feed for 22 weeks had significantly heavier uteri, and all hogs fed GMO rations had higher levels of stomach inflammation than hogs fed non-GMO. And anecdotal reports out of Iowa and elsewhere are now showing that hogs fed non-GMO feeds are not developing the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus. Research in France has shown that rats fed genetically engineered corn for their entire lives develop tumors and die earlier than rats fed normal corn, while research in Canada has shown that BT toxins in the GM corn cross the placental barrier and are found in fetal cord blood. Now, Minnesota already regulates the agricultural release of GMOs, and an EIS would be required prior to the development of GMO rice. And Minnesota has numerous statutes already setting state requirements for food labeling in Minnesota. As Representative Clark mentioned, 64 countries already require GMO labeling, and only 27 countries even allow the planting of GMO crops. Three states have adopted GMO labeling, and the Vermont Senate just passed labeling last week, and the House had already passed that, and around 30 states have introduced bills. I've been a member of the Farmers Union since 1983, and I'm very pleased that Minnesota Farmers Union is supportive of state labeling. But here's what the national president, Roger Johnson, said recently. Farmer Union members have clearly stated their position in policy adopted at annual meeting in favor of required consumer labeling for foods made from or containing GMOs. Farmers Union policy supports conspicuous mandatory labeling for food products produced throughout the processing chain to include all ingredients, additives, and processes such as genetically altered or engineered foods. Furthermore, Farmers Union member-driven policy supports the authority of lower levels of government and opposes preemption by federal standards. Surveys have consistently shown that consumers want more information about their foods, not less. The prevalence of state-led efforts to label GMOs only corroborates these findings. Just close by saying that the free market is dependent on the provision of truthful and transparent information regarding products offered for sale. Let the free market decide the fate of this novel technology and hold the GMO patent holders responsible for their products. Labeling will help open markets for Minnesota producers and processors and satisfy consumer demand. It's time to label GMOs. Thank you.
Mr. Riddle, thank you. Representative Clark, what do you have next?
Mr. Chairman, we probably have a few people who haven't been here before, so it's fine to let them know what the protocol is.
Representative Clark would tell you we don't do the clapping thing. It's, yeah. Although I'm sure Mr. Riddle appreciated it.
That's right.
Representative Atkins, I thank you. I appreciate it.
That was so, the one thing we were sure of. It was not for you, Representative Atkins. but welcome nonetheless.
I hope there'll be a chance for questions for Mr. Riddle. He's such a good expert on a lot of these questions, many of these points. But we're going to go ahead and make sure you get to hear all of the witnesses first, Mr.
Although, Representative Clark, if we could pause for a moment, I do feel bad. If you could join me in clapping for Representative Poppy.
Thank you.
All right, now I feel better. Thank you. Welcome this morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Liz McMahon. I'm the Consumer Affairs Manager at Mississippi Market, a St. Paul natural foods cooperative owned by 14,000 member owners with sales of $25 million. I've been with the business for 13 years, but this is my first time testifying before you. We've been St. Paul's source for local, organic, and non-GMO foods for 35 years. Mississippi Market Co-op accounts for just two of 17 similar cooperative stores in the greater Twin Cities metro area, with sales totaling $179 million last year. The Twin Cities, and Minnesota as a whole, has more natural foods cooperatives than anywhere else in the country. I share with you this information to illustrate that consumers in Minnesota are food savvy. We want to know where our food comes from and how it was produced. We're willing to pay more for food that was produced without synthetic pesticides, growth hormones, and GMOs. And we expect grocers like Mississippi Market to keep GMOs out of our natural food stores. In the past 6 months, I've received numerous written and verbal requests from Mississippi Market to label GMO ingredients in our stores or discontinue a possibly GMO-containing product. My response is always the same. My hands are tied. Without mandatory labeling, it's impossible to know if a non-organic product contains genetically modified organisms or not. Because the burden is on us, a small grocery store, to label or weed out the GMO foods in our food supply in the interest of our member owners, we've had to set a more restrictive product policy that requires any new products that contain corn, soy, canola, or any possible GMO product to be certified organic or non-GMO verified. These certifications can be expensive, time-intensive, and are a stress on the producers. So this policy is only a Band-Aid. It's the best option possible for our shoppers and for our member owners at this time, but ultimately it does a disservice to non-organic food producers. Why is the burden of reporting on those who choose not to use GM foods? The absence of mandatory GMO labeling restricts opportunities and imposes an unnecessary burden on conventional and small local manufacturers who are not certified organic but might very well be non-GMO. The real solution to transparency in our food supply, the real solution is transparency in our food supply so that grocers, restaurants, and all of us as eaters can make informed choices about our food, whether it's genetically modified or not. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark, who would you like to have testify next?
Yes, Mrs. Singleton.
And I think, yes.
Okay. And good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tracy Singleton, and I am the owner of the Birchwood Cafe in the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis. I am also a mom to my 5.5-year-old daughter, Lily, a board member of Right to Know Minnesota, and as a member of the human race, I am also a consumer of food. I am also a first-time testifier, and I am proud of these labels. I opened the Birchwood Cafe in 1995, and for the past 18 years, it has been our mission to connect people to where their food comes from. We source as much food as possible from local farmers who use sustainable practices. Trust, transparency, and relationships are at the heart of what we do. It's what the Birchwood is built on. When I shop for the cafe, I am always aware of the trust my customers place in me and my farmer relationships. My customers rely on me to provide that direct connection with the people who grow their food. My customers rely on me for good, real food, food that is produced without chemicals, food that does not harm people or the planet. Yes, people love our food for how it tastes, but I also attribute the success of my business directly to the growing public and consumer awareness of the importance of our food choices, where it comes from, and how it's produced. Specifically, more and more of my customers are concerned about genetically modified organisms, GMOs. In ongoing efforts to meet customer demands, I am constantly reviewing our sourcing practices, and I find it increasingly difficult to buy the food I want to serve. Currently, the only way I can know if the food I buy is not genetically engineered is if it is certified organic. But certified organic, when available, can sometimes be out of our budget. As an employer who pays people well and provides benefits, margins are small, and I have to continually balance food and labor costs with my desire to keep our prices accessible to our community. If they can't have organic, my customer's next choice is for food that does not contain genetically engineered ingredients. Take our Breakfast in Heaven granola, for example, a very popular menu item that we retail at the cafe and sell wholesale to local co-ops and grocers. When we serve the granola at the Birchwood, we're able to talk with our customers about it face-to-face and let them know that it does not contain genetically engineered ingredients. With wholesale, however, I needed to find another way to assure buyers and consumers that our granola is GMO-free. Organic certification is not an option to provide customer assurance for my granola because of two of my small suppliers are not certified organic, and so I chose the non-GMO project for verification. A respected and recognizable label, non-GMO project verification is expensive to me in terms of time, administration, and yearly fees. And while I am glad that third-party verification businesses like the non-GMO project exist, I am not happy about the way the system currently works. I do not own the patent on GMOs, and I certainly do not profit from them. In fact, it costs me time and money to avoid them. Why, then, do I have to be the one to pay the price to assure my customers that my food does not contain something they don't want in the first place? Mandatory GMO labeling will offer me greater choice in the marketplace to buy from more Minnesota farmers, including farmers who are non-organic, non-GMO. GMO labels will also support me in my sourcing, allowing me to focus my time, energy, and financial resources on growing my business and supporting my community. In summary, House Bill 3140, by labeling genetically engineered food and seed, will help me buy the kind of food my customers want and expect, and the kind of food my daughter Lily and I want to eat. I'd like to thank Representative Clark for her persistence on this issue, and I'd like to thank you all for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, I believe the cookies that you are all being offered are produced right there at the Birchwood Cafe.
They are.
And our compliments of our speaker today.
Thank you for the cookies.
You're welcome.
Representative Clark, it's my understanding that those were the three witnesses that you had lined up to testify.
Yes.
We do have others on the list, but that portion of our testimony was the proponents on behalf of the bill. We've got a handful of people with given equal time to make out the arguments in opposition to it, and then we're going to take a couple people, if there's still time, that have signed up to testify.
So, do you have any? Is that later?
I'm sorry, Representative Clark.
I see the name Ann Tenner. Is she on their list?
She is. What I'm going to do is come back to her at the very end.
Okay.
We've got others signed up to testify now in opposition. Are Ms. Johnson, Mr. Quillis, Ms. Fool? Are they available?
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce today. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber. I will be brief to allow my colleagues, Mr. Osnes and Ms. Fool, to address you, but the Chamber of Commerce opposes state regulation requiring labeling of regulation of biotechnology-enhanced products. Biotech products are among the most reviewed and regulated products in the United States as well as worldwide. State regulation will interfere with national standards in placing an undue burden on Minnesota businesses attempting to compete in a global marketplace and would lead to confusion of customers as well as state-by-state labeling leading to confusion among manufacturers as well as retailers of products. Ultimately, the Chamber believes the federal government has a responsibility to regulate food, plant, and other biotechnology-enhanced products under the statutes and regulations adopted by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture, and the Environmental Protection Agency. Additionally, the Department of Agriculture here in Minnesota also regulates the release of genetically engineered organisms. Regulations by these agencies on the state and federal level ensure that products are safe and under a consistent, uniform national policy. Mr. Chairman, if I could give you one example on the national level of how the Chamber thinks the best way that this would work, it would be the United States Department of Agriculture currently has a national organic program. So we don't have 50 different definitions of what's organic and what's not. And they go through and have an ideal. I think that's an ideal model to follow. It provides consistent uniform standards for consumers, manufacturers, and retailers across the nation. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to cede my time, if I could, to Ms. Fool and Mr. Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. And who's Ms. Poole or Mr. Gosnes want to go next? Mr. Gosnes, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Perry Osmus. I serve as Executive Director with the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. And Agri-Growth's 200-plus members represent a broad cross-section of Minnesota's agriculture and food sector, from agribusinesses and related industries to food processors, production agriculture, and academia. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 3140. And although it's referred to as a GMO labeling bill, it's ultimately an anti-biotechnology bill, which is unfortunate given that national and international science community and U.S. government bodies alike have found that these products are essentially identical to conventional varieties and pose no greater risk than non-GMO food products. A few points I want to make, I know we're short of time, but first off, biotech products are safe. They are among the most reviewed, studied, scrutinized, and regulated products in the world. Testing has shown, and I should say that, and Mr. Quillis mentioned this earlier, that these products at the federal level go through review from three federal agencies, USDA, EPA, and FDA. And testing has shown, and FDA review has confirmed, that GMOs are nutritionally the same as non-GMO crops, including the same level of key nutrients like amino acids, proteins, fiber, minerals, and vitamins. And according to FDA policy, requiring the labeling of foods that are indistinguishable from foods produced from traditional methods would mislead consumers by falsely implying differences where none exist. Second point is numerous national and international organizations have looked closely into the issue of GMOs and have concluded no greater risk or difference than with non-GMO crops. Biotech crops have been grown by farmers for over 17 years. And foods derived from agriculture biotechnology have been eaten by billions of people across the world without a single documented health problem. Respected scientific authorities such as the National Academies of Science, United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, World Health Organization, American Medical Association, American Dietetic Association, and American Association for Advancement of Science have all looked at hundreds of scientific studies and concluded that foods with biotech-derived ingredients do not pose any more risk than other foods. Third point I want to make is biotechnology has been a great tool for Minnesota farmers and U.S. farmers and worldwide. You know, modifying crops through selective breeding have been going on for thousands of years, and biotechnology is just one additional aspect of that. According to USDA, 90% of the soybeans in Minnesota growing are biotech varieties, and nearly 90% of corn are. And there's a reason for that. Farmers have found this to be a useful tool to enhance production, conserve soil, reduce fossil fuel use. Other crops other than corn and soybeans that are currently grown with biotechnology include alfalfa, sugar beets, and canola. The other thing about biotechnology as relates to production agriculture, there are other things in the pipeline that are going to be good for farmers and I believe consumers down the road as well. Things such as varieties that improve nitrogen efficiency in plants and increase drought tolerance. The one thing about agriculture is it's always been about continuous improvement, using the best science and technology to help improve and enhance production efficiencies. Fourth point I'll make is that in the future, biotechnology has the potential to provide future benefits related to human health as it relates to nutrition, dealing with allergens, and disease resistance. Things such as omega-3 oils from canola oil that can help prevent heart disease, or new alternatives to trans fats from soybean oil. And scientists are also finding ways to remove common allergens in crops such as corn and, or excuse me, peanuts and wheat. I'm almost done here, but my fifth point is biotechnology plays an important role to help feed a growing world population. And that's important to Minnesota agriculture, and it should be important to the economy as a whole, because we rank sixth nationally in terms of exports. But according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, by 2050, worldwide food demand is expected to nearly double. And 70% of this food production increase must come from efficiency improved technology. And the bottom line is this, is we're going to have to, as farmers, produce more on less land. And biotechnology is an important tool to accomplish that. So while the studies reviewed by scientific community and U.S. governmental bodies have shown no difference between GMO and non-GMO products, we do recognize and support the choice of consumers to purchase non-GMO products. We do have those options to do so, whether it's through a USDA-certified organic label, whether it's through food companies voluntarily labeling their products GMO-free. And finally, while AgriGrowth opposes state GMO labeling requirements such as this legislation, we do support federal legislation that would set up voluntary GMO labeling standards through the FDA. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Mr. Hodge. And Ms. Poole, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Atkins and members of the committee. I will keep my remarks incredibly brief, but I appreciate your willingness to hold an informational hearing on this important issue today and the opportunity to testify in opposition of House File 3140. My name is Jamie Poole, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. We are a state trade association that represents the retail food industry for over 117 years. We have over 200 retail members with nearly 1,100 stores across the state, about 100 distribution and manufacturer partners. Our member companies employ approximately 125,000 union and non-union employees. We are committed to providing civic leadership and strive to advance the common interests of all of those engaged in any aspect of the food industry in Minnesota. Our member companies are the cornerstone of the communities that we serve. We provide good local jobs, a wide variety of food choices, and support our neighbors. Our number one priority is providing customers with the tools to make the best and safest choices for their families. The marketplace is ever-changing. Today, your average grocery store stocks over 42,000 items, or SKUs as we call them, and nearly 20,000 new items are introduced annually. On average, the marketplace holds over 300,000 opportunities for different products to be in the stores. We serve an incredibly diverse population with an ever-growing list of dietary restrictions and ethnic preferences that influence their shopping habits. To provide the best experiences, we listen to their needs, stock the products that they request. We are the last stop on the food chain. So it is our role not only to provide the shopping basket choice, but to educate on the products that our customers are serving. The Minnesota Grocers Association and its members oppose a state-by-state approach to labeling laws. They foster a patchwork approach to a national issue. Food arrives in our stores from manufacturers from all across the country and, quite frankly, the world. We require a large variety of resources to meet our consumers' needs. Again, the marketplace is ever-changing. Our members are faced with tough competition every day. And in this industry, where our overall net profit is typically around 1%, which is a penny on every dollar spent, this proposal has the potential to put brick-and-mortar Minnesota businesses at a direct competitive disadvantage. Consumers have a multitude of choices today when it comes to making their food choices. Approximately 90% of Minnesotans live about a half an hour from a bordering state. The advantage of the online platform expands the purchasing power even further. Mandating unique state labeling requirements will have adverse consequences and limit selection and drive up costs. We as an industry support a nationwide approach to labeling standards. A bill has been introduced in Congress that calls on the FDA to develop a national standard modeled after the organic food labeling standard established by the USDA. We believe this is the best possible way to address the concerns this legislation brings forth. It serves the entire food chain from farm to fork and provides a clear definition and consistent message for consumers. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Poole. And Ms. Johnson, did you want to testify as well? And then we've got Ms. Tenner on the list as well.
I will be very brief. Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify about this very important issue. My name is Kelsey Johnson, and I serve as Director of State Affairs for the Grocery Manufacturers Association, the Washington, D.C.-based voice of more than 300 leading food, beverage, and consumer products companies. A few of them are located here as well. On behalf of GMA, I would like to take this opportunity to register our opposition to House File 3140 and the concept of mandated labeling of genetically modified food and beverage products. GMA and its member companies are committed to providing consumers with the safest possible products, and foods and beverages containing ingredients derived from genetically engineered plants are safe. Ensuring the safety of our products and maintaining the confidence of consumers is our single most important goal of our industry. Genetic engineering is not new. It has been around for 20 years. Today, foods with ingredients derived from genetically engineered plants make up about 80% of the foods that we eat every day because they require fewer pesticides, less water, and keep production costs down, reducing costs to consumers by about 20 to 30%. Genetically engineered labeling is not currently required on any food sold for human consumption in the United States for a simple reason. There is no safety, health, or regulatory reason for such a label. Prominent independent scientific organizations have come to the same conclusion. This quote from the American Association of the Advancement of Science provides a useful summary. The World Health Organization, the American Medical Association, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, the British Royal Society, and every other respected organization that has examined the evidence has come to the same conclusion. Consuming foods containing ingredients derived from genetically modified crops is no riskier than consuming the same foods containing ingredients from crop plants modified by conventional plant improvement techniques. GMA has joined together with 34 food and beverage organizations representing all food from farm to fork to create a coalition to support a federal solution to GMO labeling. Our coalition supports House Resolution 4432 introduced in the U.S. Congress over 2 weeks ago. The legislation would do a number of things. It would first affirm the FDA as the nation's authority for the use of and labeling of genetically modified food ingredients, require the FDA to conduct a safety review of all new GMO traits before they are introduced into commerce, establish federal standards through the FDA for companies that want to voluntarily label their product for the absence of or presence of GMO food ingredients so that consumers clearly understand the choices in the marketplace, define the term natural through the FDA for its use in food and beverage products. While I certainly acknowledge the role and responsibility of the legislature to act to protect the interests of consumers of the state, the scientific consensus in support of the safety and nutritional equivalence of foods derived from biotechnology leads to the conclusion that the public is not at risk. The limited space on a food label should be reserved for the critically important food safety and nutritional information that can allow customers to make safe and healthful choices. Thank you for your time and for this opportunity to register our opposition to House File 3140. For the reasons I have outlined here, GMA respectfully opposes the adoption of this legislation, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you.
And at this point, the opponents have had a few more minutes than the proponents, but Ms. Tanner, I believe Representative Clark is testifying in support of the bill. Hopefully that'll bring us into some balance. Ms. Tanner, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Tenner, and I'm an attorney with National Health Freedom Action, and we're a nonprofit that supports and promotes access to complementary and alternative medicine, and that includes access to whole food diets and GMO-free diets for consumers. We are here to testify in support of House File 3140 for several reasons. First, the GMO products that are on the shelves and in over 80 to 90% of the processed foods on our shelf today are not what the manufacturers would like you to believe that they are. This is not the type of hybridization or end result that you would get from grafting or budding or the type of original ways to create new species, new organisms. Transgenic creation of products right now is available. So this is where the biotechnology companies can take the genes of one organism. For example, a beetle who is able to produce a BT toxin inside of every cell of their body. The researchers can take this segment of that gene and put it into corn to allow the corn to produce that toxin in every single cell. This is not what can be achieved through cross-pollinization. We also support mandatory labeling because the GMO crops are not doing what the GE manufacturers said that they were going to do. There have been severe economic consequences for the farmers who have relied on the false promises of the GE manufacturers, and this has resulted in increased use of chemicals, insecticides, and pesticides, as well as resistance among the pests that the products were designed to actually target. And at the same time that we've had increased use of the pesticides and chemicals, we are also not realizing the increased yield that the GE manufacturers have promised. We already heard today that there is increasing need to feed more people with less. Well, after 17 years of being on the market and 20 years of research, that has not been realized. We don't believe that the label would be disruptive to the economy. We believe it will actually be a benefit for the economy and the local farmers here. Personally, I actually have a background in food science myself, and I'm fully aware that manufacturers change their labels all the time to make claims about natural, to make claims about low in trans fat, to do a special on the the Olympics team, they're changing their labels all the time. And this would not be disruptive or break their banks. We also believe that this information, contrary to what you're hearing, that a label would be misleading to consumers, we believe that the absence of this information is actually what is misleading. This information is material to consumers' purchasing decisions, and we respectfully request that you give them the tools to make informed decisions about how they spend their money and what they're putting into their bodies. This issue is not going away, and we look forward to helping you and Representative Clark understand how important this issue is to the citizens and nationwide in the upcoming session. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tanner. And Representative Clark, before I give you the final word, because it's your bill, I just wanted to compliment all of the testifiers, I think, on behalf of the committee. This is precisely what an informational hearing is supposed to be about. Both sides did an outstanding job of making their cases in a cogent way, albeit briefly. I know we confine the amount of time. The next step for both sides is that, obviously, this is for informational purposes this morning. For it to move forward, it would have to come back before this committee and be voted out. I would suggest that if you feel strongly about it, that you continue to share your thoughts with members of the committee and myself. Whether it gets another hearing and there's action taken on it is oftentimes not just my decision, but a reflection of whether members are telling me that they'd like the bill to move or to not move. So that's important. I also want to acknowledge that Chair Poppe is here from the Ag Policy Committee, and I appreciate her listening in on the testimony this morning. Representative Clark, I'll give you the final word, and then we're going to move on to Representative Lencheski's bill.
Okay, so there's not really time for questions, just some final comments?
Not for purposes. The main goal this morning was to identify the pros and cons, and then...
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, as you said, there was a good job done. I hope there was a lot of information that people did glean from the testimony that was offered. Just a couple of comments. It sounds like the opposition does think that there should be labeling, but it should be federally driven rather than state driven. I just want to share with the members of the committee, I've been here a few years now, and over the years, one of the things that helps us get good federal legislation is to have states be the laboratory of democracy and create the bills that help create eventually good legislation. I'll give you an example of another right-to-know example that in my own experience, which was when I first got elected, there was absolutely no right for people in Minnesota to know whether or not they were being exposed to toxic exposures at their workplace. There was no workers' right to know bill. I was a young legislator who didn't know I couldn't pass stuff that was hard, and so we passed it in about 3 years. We had major opposition. All kinds of, the chemical companies, the user folks came and presented lots of opposition to the bill. And then Minnesota became the sixth state to say that workers do have a right to know when they're being exposed to toxic substances. After about another half dozen states passed that law, then the federal government moved forward, and we had a federal workers' right to know exposure to toxic substances. Minnesota's law is still stronger, but that's kind of the way legislation happens at the federal level. That's sometimes desired by consumers and citizens, workers, and so on. So I'd say I would like to see Minnesota take its place. Right now there are four states, three that have the governors have signed forth, that's, I believe, on the governor's desk, that have already said, yes, our consumers, our state citizens, have a right to know when there's genetically engineered food before them. So this real basic right to know, I think, it's a health issue, it's a science issue. And Mr. Chairman, you and I have been through the situations where we've had the scientists arguing against each other, and I really encourage people to look at this. This is good science to look at the issue of genetically engineered foods. And I'm confident that when you do, especially as the evidence mounts and there's more research done by other countries and by our own states, sometimes state universities and then other academic institutions looking at what the impacts are. The fact that genetically engineered substances end up in the breast milk of our babies is something I hope you all pay attention to for our children. We're starting with the very youngest people. Some of the experimental efforts here that are going forward, as was pointed out by the proponents in the last witness, the promises of genetic engineering have not really come true for our farmers. And I think that I grew up on a farm. I know how important it is to grow good food. I'm right now involved in doing some organic farming. It's really important that we have good and safe food. And so, Mr. Chairman, I believe on both sides I heard a commitment to consumer choice And that's what this committee is all about. So, Mr. Chairman, I will promise you that I will keep working on this, and my door is open to, obviously, to both sides on this issue, and I hope we can come back to you next year with a really strong bill again.
Thank you, Representative Clark, and thank you to the testifiers, and thank you to everyone who joined us this morning. With that, we do have a quorum at this point. Representative Sandin, I think, was the first one in the room this morning. So he'll move the minutes of which meeting? The March 26, 2014 meeting. All in favor of those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Next up is House File 2207, which is Representative Lincheski's bill.
They're not standing.
I thought everybody was here for your bill, Representative Lincheski, but there appear to be.
I'm here for your bill.
Sure.
You really like this one.
No, I still love it.
Representative Lincheski, the chair will move that House File 2207 be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Representative Lincheski, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, honestly, I cannot even hear you.
What?
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could try to tell folks to be quiet, but I'm guessing. Hey folks, if you would do me a favor, we've got another bill that's about to be heard. If you could, I know that you're trying to exit. If you could do it as quietly as you can so that we can hear from Representative Lincheski, it'd be appreciated. And thank you very much for doing that. Representative Lincheski to House File 2207.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your motion. And I believe it might have been to rules, but like I said, I couldn't hear it.
It was to rules.
Okay. thank you. Thank you. Good morning, members, and it's nice to be here. I think everyone understands this bill. If you just take a look in your packet, it's a very short bill. And all the bill does is prohibit lottery tickets being sold online. So, you know, that's what this bill is about, and I look forward to discussing it with all of you. I'd like to, if possible, reserve a few minutes at the end to
absolutely
make comments, and I know there are people on both sides of this issue who probably want to testify. Mr. Chair, I have not coordinated with anyone to testify, but looking in the room, I think there are people who would like to testify from a number of positions, and if I could just sit back and hear what they have to say. I also have passed out a piece of information, Mr. Chair. As you know, the Tax Committee heard this informationally only because it is the purview of your committee and it's in your possession. But a number of issues were raised as to how things were scored in the fiscal note. And since that time, the nonpartisan staff has taken another look and has provided this document, which is being passed out to you now. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Representative Lincheski. The testifiers that have signed up, quite frankly, these are folks that have been here before and know how to testify briefly in light of the fact that we have to be on the floor at 10 a.m. So if you would do us that favor, I do have in support of the bill Mr. Lund and Mr. Grassel. If either one of them wants to lead off, but again, if you could be as brief as possible, I think this is an issue that, frankly, has been before this committee before, so we're fairly educated with respect to it. Mr. Lund, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Al Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. And I have to first start by saying that admit this morning that I am guilty. I'm guilty as charged by the director of the lottery of advocating for charities, for the veterans, fraternals, fire reliefs, churches, civic groups, and youth groups that raise funds in our local communities for needs in our local communities. We are a competitor of the lottery. We do have some concerns. We have concerns that when the lottery tells us that they have no designs on our business, yet runs full-page ads to the bar owners that we're in, saying that it's a great compliment to our business, and they talk about that business is up 5%. What they don't talk about is that the charities that did not use the lottery in their business were up 7% that same fiscal year. The lottery director doesn't talk about the fact that they now have a game online that has spinning wheels. Spinning wheels is specifically prohibited in my statutes. We cannot do that without your permission. Yet they're doing it. And what spinning wheels is code speak in gaming language for slots. So the lottery director tells us that he has no intention of doing any of these things, but with the caveat, he could if he wanted to. So what we're asking you is to take a good long look at this. We're not saying that the technology that's being used is not a good one or one that can be used for value for us, for them. But what we are saying is that one person should not be making that decision unilaterally. So we're asking your support on 2207, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Gressel.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jake Grassel with Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. I'll keep my remarks brief. We're here. Our organization is in support of House File 2207. One of our biggest concerns here is you have an entity that is authorizing, regulating, and marketing the games without any oversight. And the stated purpose of doing so is to attract a new generation of consumers to gamble in Minnesota. They're going after 18 to 30-year-olds under the auspice of marketing. And I would argue that this is a very, very dangerous road that we are taking because the societal impacts of gambling moving to the internet are real, and they're going to reach into each and every one of your communities, your districts, and devastate lives across the state. The independent studies have shown, and this is, I think, important for this committee, independent studies have shown that for every dollar of gambling that the state brings in revenue, we're going to lose $2 to $3 in the social costs that's going to take to fight that. The same studies have shown that the propensity to gamble is most concentrated within a radius of 25 miles from any gambling facility. The expansion to internet gaming in Minnesota now means that instead of having gambling spread out in various parts of the state, we're going to now have gambling in every smartphone, every iPhone, every school, every library, every Starbucks across the state. And I ask you to look at, to see how many lives, how many jobs, how many families do we need to destroy before we say enough is enough. The lottery is going to come up here and say that they have a $50 limit and they're protected. But the person setting the $50 limit is the one arguing about how great the $50 limit is. He could go back to his office tomorrow and say $50 is not enough. We need to do it $500. We need to do it $5,000. We need to unlimit gambling so that they can meet the revenue projections. I ask you to rein them in. They're also going to tell you that this has been occurring all across the nation, that we're the 10th state to go to online gambling. That's just not true. To our knowledge, this is the first state in the nation that's going to instant scratch off tickets. We're essentially now turning our smartphones, our internet computers, everything into a slot machine in homes across America. So I'd ask you to set some policy here for our state. Our state needs to stop encouraging Minnesotans to lose money. Rather, we need to start encouraging our next generation of Minnesotans to start saving, start putting money in an IRA, start saving for the future, rather than putting their hopes and dreams on a logical chance in the lottery. I would appreciate your support of House File 2207.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. And thank you, Mr. Lund. With respect to opponents of the bill, or others that have signed up to testify, I have Mr. Van Petten, Mr. Strutt, Mr. Gale, and Mr. Tatke. Gentlemen, who would like to testify? Again, I had Mr. Van Petten, Mr. Strutt, Mr. Gale, and Mr. Tatke.
They're going to roll the dice to see who gets.
Ba-dum-bum. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ed Van Petten, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. I don't want to argue semantics, but I do not consider that the lottery is in competition with the charities. I'm one of their biggest supporters. I love meat raffles. Not very good at the pull tabs. Love meat raffles. I'll admit there's going to be some overlap in the player base, but by and large, pull tab players are social gamers. They sit around. I've seen them in groups. They fill up boxes of pull tabs as they play, and they have fun at it. And I've talked to them at times, and I say, do you ever play the lottery? And they say, no, it's too boring. So, I mean, it's a different mindset completely, and I'm fine with that. I'm good with that, and I support them wholeheartedly. I've never contested them at all. I do not know where there are any spinning wheels on our website, and I'm pretty familiar with that. There's one game that may be argued to simulate a paddle wheel, but that's nothing like a slot machine whatsoever. And I think this committee knows that the lottery has very severe oversight, including this committee, as well as the governor's office, who I report to on a very regular basis and keep informed of what's going on in our offices. And if we're going to legislate against marketing to young adults, I think you need to get a lot of the energy drink companies, Mountain Dew for one, in here and talk to them, too. I mean, that's the emerging market for all of us. Our player base is aging. It's decreased over the last 10 years from about 1.6 million to 1.2 million. However, our sales have been increasing until this year. So, and we're about 600,000 fewer players than we were then. So we would prefer more players playing less money, and that's what we are attempting to do. And nobody ever said we were trying to be the 10th state. We were probably about the third or fourth state to sell on the internet beginning in 2010. We said we are one of nine states selling on the internet, and there are probably close to 100 lotteries worldwide that sell on the internet. Most of them sell electronic instant tickets. And with the introduction of electronic instant tickets in every jurisdiction, retail sales at the brick-and-mortar retail have increased. In Great Britain, in 4 years, 20% increase after introduction of electronic instant tickets. And with that being said, as I said, this program started in 2010. So we're in our fourth year of these internet sales. We have not shown a problem. In fact, worldwide, with all the jurisdictions and research, not one jurisdiction has reported any problem or increase in addictive rates. Not one jurisdiction has complained about a reduction in retail brick-and-mortar sales. And they're just, we provide the research to you. I've heard the argument about a 1-to-3-to-1 cost of gaming for years and years in hearings just such as this. I've not once seen a study that supports that. There's one article by a sociologist years ago that states that. And that's it. We've provided you a packet of information, including two studies. One done before we started on the project with the electronic instant tickets, because Scientific Games was going to have to put in a bigger system to handle that and to take over the play at the pump. So that study was done. Recently, just last weekend, we commissioned another independent study to be done that showed that of those responding, and there were close to 1,000 responses, 74% opposed a ban on internet sales of lottery tickets. Now, that being said, I know there are studies out there that show about 80% oppose internet gambling. But internet or sales of lottery tickets that are controlled by the state agency, the Minnesota Lottery, meet with wide acceptance statewide. Now, you all also have fiscal notes before you. And I think those are accurate to a degree, but the more this thing has drug on, the more we have dug into it and tried to figure out what exactly the impact would be on our business. And the way this bill is written, we would have to shut down sales of internet products on enactment, as I read it. We have subscriptions sales that are purchased as much as 1 year in advance. So what do we do with those sales? We have to shut down our system. We have a contract with those players. Has anybody thought about those ramifications? As I've said before, there are unknown ramifications to bills such as this. They need to be looked at. Now, the lottery was passed by the people in the 1980s. It was opposed by the legislature, but the legislature enacted it. And I think I have sufficient information provided to you that shows the people want this, too. And they want it to be done responsibly, and they want it to be run by the Minnesota Lottery, not by some unregulated offshore account. As I've told you before, Google Play Poker in Minnesota, you'll get at least 5 websites. There's gambling on the internet, unregulated gambling. We want to sell our product there, and we want to sell it on a limited basis and make it more of a sampling so people will go to our partners and brick-and-mortar retailers. That's our benefit. These are the people that have built this lottery, and why would we try to hurt them? We've studied research worldwide that teaches us how to help them, and that's what we're trying to do. I know you're about out of time. I'll be quiet. But there's a lot more I'd like to say, but before anybody votes on this, please at least take a cursory look at this information and the two studies presented. I would appreciate that.
And could you, just one thing that you didn't mention, and if you could address it quickly, is that I know one of the concerns that has arisen, and frankly prompted by legal opinions that the lottery has received in the past, that talked about, you know, regardless of how people feel about the sale of lottery tickets, the legal opinions that you received seem to reflect that you could get into far greater options. Just let's call it that. Other sorts of endeavors via internet gaming. Can you tell us what the lottery's what your perception is with respect to that? Whether you have any intent
Sure.
to grow your operations into other sorts of internet gaming?
Yeah. There was an opinion granted by a former general counsel in, I believe, in 2010 that indicated that there is an argument that we could have slot-type machine or slot-type games on the Internet and that simulate casino gaming. However, on further review and both general counsels for the our vendors disagree with that because there is a clause that we think specifically prohibits that in the statute. And I've provided what I thought were the relevant statutes in this packet of information because I knew we'd be on a short time. And I'd be glad to answer questions, or I'm sure I know there's at least one attorney on this committee that you can feel free to review it because I'm sure we're right on that one. Okay. And it's really kind of an irrelevant point at this point. If this bill passes, then it's pretty clear.
Well, and speaking only for myself, I think that is my perception in any event is that that is one of the driving forces behind support for this legislation, is the concern that this will go far beyond just the sale of online lottery tickets and make a foray into other areas that that most members of the legislature and the folks that responded to your survey are not comfortable with. I believe you said there was 80% opposition to internet gaming.
No, that was a Star Tribune poll.
Okay.
That, and I don't remember the exact number, but it was close to 80%, I think, that when asked do you agree with or with internet gambling, they said they didn't. But the polls that refer to a state-run regulated site selling lottery tickets, both polls that we have provided you are over 70% acceptance.
And thank you, Mr. Van Petten. We do have, there were others that had signed up if they want to testify, Mr. Strutt, Mr. Gale, or Mr. Tatke. And gentlemen, at this point, you literally have to, in light of the amount of time that's been taken thus far, you've got about a minute each. So,
okay.
Good luck.
I'll talk as best as I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the esteemed committee. I'm David Gale. I'm the executive director of the North American Association of State and Provincial Lotteries. We are the nonprofit of which every government-sanctioned lottery throughout North America belongs. Here in the United States, there are 44 lotteries plus D.C. I would very quickly like to just give you an overview of our industry. Last year in the United States, there was $63 billion in lottery sales, of which $38 billion went back to the players in the form of prizes. $22 billion went back to the individual jurisdictions or states to support the programs and services, and $4 billion went back to pay the retailers who sell the products, and many of them are mom-and-pop stores that would be out of businesses if it was not for the lottery. The money goes to support significant programs, education, parks and recreation, capital construction, general revenue fund, which is where a portion of the money goes here, and that allows the legislators to allocate those funds wherever they wish that it should be. I just wanted to give you a very quick overview, a history of internet gaming so that you can have it in perspective. Georgia began in 2012, November, selling their games on the internet. Illinois actually was the first to begin selling games on the internet, which was in March of 2012, and then of course you began selling in September of 2013. In addition to those three jurisdictions, New Hampshire, New York, North Carolina, North Dakota, and Virginia also sell subscription programs through the internet, while Maine, Maryland, and Vermont sell subscription programs via the mail service. Casino type games, this is one of the things that I have heard being discussed today of concern. In New Jersey and Delaware, they are the only two. New Jersey began internet sales in December of 2013, and they're only selling their products at casinos only. In Delaware began internet sales in October of 2013, and they're only selling them at racetracks. I guess it's important for me to address the emerging market. The fact that the internet, 73% of Americans use the internet for some purpose or another. It is not a new form of communication, and it is not a new form of communication for our industry as well. So I just want to be sure that we are clear that the objective here is to assist in the growth of sales of the lottery in Minnesota, not only for the lottery itself, but also for its retailers. And if you expect to remain relevant, if you expect to have a player base 10 years from now, then this is an option that you must be looking at. I certainly understand your concern about the authority and whether or not this is within the purview of the lottery and what they might do next. But that's what this process is about. This process would allow you to say, wait, we want to stop, take a look at what you're doing, and be sure that there are no development of future games that you feel will be a threat to your citizens. With that, I'll turn the time over to Chuck Strutt.
And thank you for your brevity. Mr. Strutt.
Mr. Chairman, honorable representatives, good morning. My name is Chuck Strutt. I've made some cuts to my speech here, so I'll try to keep within the time limit. I'm the director of the Multi-State Lottery Association. I've served in that position for 26 years. The association is a nonprofit group owned and operated by the U.S. lotteries. With our multi-state games being sold through all 45 U.S. lotteries, we facilitate the operation of 7 year-round multi-state games in the United States, which may be sold in as many as all 45 states, the district, and U.S. territories. The association designs games, conducts drawings, about 2,600 drawings per year, manages the multi-state finances and accounting, develops physical and logical standards for the security of multi-state games, and then conducts reviews in each lottery jurisdiction to ensure that the U.S. lottery, that lottery meets the standards and that all member lotteries can be assured of a secure game with integrity. In fact, we spent a few years, here working with the Minnesota Lottery, and this project began even before Ed Van Petten became the director, to ensure the security and the integrity of the system implementation for this. The Minnesota Lottery is one of a growing number of states that sell lottery games through the internet, through self-service gas stations, and through ATM machines, including the multi-state lottery games Powerball and Mega Millions. This bill proposes to immediately stop all Minnesota citizens from purchasing tickets, from having tickets in play, and from allowing the lottery to pay prizes for tickets and purchased and paid through the internet. I am here today only to urge you to please take a rational, reasoned, and considered approach to what you're about to do. Every U.S. lottery understands that our very first duty, our very first responsibility, is to operate games with unquestioned security and integrity. Every lottery carefully sets out the odds, we set out the prize levels, the ways to play, and we carefully design how the drawings are going to be done, knowing that we must deliver on those promises. No lottery can accept a play, take a person's dollars for a lottery ticket, and then cancel that play or refuse to play. I'm here to ask you to consider the Minnesota's lottery's responsibility, your responsibility, to the other U.S. lottery partners in these multi-state games. the Minnesota Lottery has entered into a contractual agreement with the other U.S. lotteries to offer these games. When one lottery suddenly reneges on its contract with a player to hold a play and to pay a prize, that affects all partner lotteries involved in the same multi-state game. All lotteries share in funding that prize. All lottery partners will share the burden of paying a court-ordered prize payment based on a contract that has been unfairly canceled.
And Mr. Strutt, with my apologies, I need to stop you there because we do have to be on the floor in, well, about 5 minutes. But thank you very much for joining us this morning. Representative Schoen has an amendment, then Representative Davids has a comment. Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm going to offer the, I believe it's the DE1. Is that, where is it?
It is.
And this, just put this out there for discussion because basically what this does is it, stops the play at the pump or through a self-service device such as an ATM, etc., and adds that to the list. One of the things that I'm concerned about, Mr. Chair, is the ability for age verification. I know that we discuss that they feel that they have measures in place that prevent underage individuals from obtaining these tickets at the pump or at a device without having someone check a ID. When I've been at work, I had a kid show me how to get on the dark web, where he went to the store, paid cash for a Visa gift card, then converted that to a PayPal account, which he then converted to Bitcoin, and then could purchase illicit drugs and explosive devices off the internet. And so I guess I'm not trying to say that the lottery is selling explosive devices by any means, but what my concern is that we say that we have safeguards in place to protect underage people from purchasing the items that we don't want them to, and this doesn't really seem to make me feel comfortable. Now, that being said, I understand that's probably not the direction that Representative Lincheski was trying to get that far into the weeds on this bill, and I will withdraw the amendment to make her life just a touch easier as she moves forward with her bill. And I do need a question about 349A06 subdivision 5E, in which the lottery can only accept cash. And so how does that in these devices when you go online or go to an ATM, maybe Mr. Van Petten can come down and explain how the lottery was able to get the authority to now accept credit card for online or at the pump or an ATM to dispense any lottery cards or gaming at all.
Very briefly, though, because we're going to go to you, then Representative Davidson, Representative Lincheski, and then we're going to vote.
I think I've answered that Mr. about 10 times in this committee over the last 2 years. Only debit cards can be used for the purchase of lottery. The statute specifically prohibits the use of credit. Debit card is considered cash.
How about bitcoins? No, I'm just... No. Let's not even go there.
Don't yet.
thank you, Representative Schoen, for the amendment. The amendment is withdrawn. Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I know we're on a limited time here, but members, this is a massive, massive expansion of gaming with no statutory authority to do so. It kind of reminds me of they're asking for forgiveness rather than having asked for permission. They talk about this should have been studied, 4 years ago maybe. Members, this is not the online lottery. This is online crack. This is addictive, and this is going to destroy families. I will talk to the folks later. I was reading through the contract, and we talked about a $2.5 million chargeback. I didn't see it in here, so possibly, Mr. Van Patten, you could talk to me about where that is. I didn't see it reading through here. I would really like to, and we've got to get a pay at the pump. That's not for today. We need to get an ATM. That's not for today. But I just want to thank Chair Lincheski for the Lincheski Davids bill, another fine piece of legislation brought forward by the two. And so I'll say that, and I just say to Mr. Van Patten, God bless you, you're not in Kansas anymore. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids. Mr. Van Patten, anything to that point?
Well, Mr. Chair, yes. There is a provision in Amendment 1 that allows for a negotiated settlement. At this point, we only know that the investment of the vendor is about $2.5 million. The choice was not putting anything in the fiscal note, later have to pay that money and look like an idiot, or put it in the fiscal note knowing that it's a possibility in the future, and, you know, at least being upfront with the legislature about that potential liability. I don't know. That's between a rock and a hard spot when you're a state agency, and I apologize for any confusion.
No, speaking again,
Mr. Chair,
for me, Mr. Van Petten, we'd much rather know of the potential, even if there's an argument whether or not it's likely or not. We appreciate your transparency with respect to that.
If I could ask Mr. for Van one Petten. More minute, we had a retailer drive all the way here from Madison Lake because of his feelings about he is a member of the Play of the Pump initiative, also a supporter of our internet initiatives. If he could just introduce himself and make that
absolutely.
Statement.
Absolutely. And I thought I called for him. I didn't see anybody come down, but I'd certainly be happy to hear from him. Members, I know we start at 10, but with your indulgence, when a Minnesota resident comes in, I see everybody nodding. Sir, thank you for traveling in this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name's Michael Tatchy. My wife and I own the market in Madison Lake. We instituted Play at the Pump here about 2 months ago. It has been interesting to watch our customers come in. I think it's a great idea for, say, a housewife comes in, she's got two kids sitting in the back seat, doesn't want to get them out of the seat or whatever, especially on a day like today. She can buy her Powerball tickets right at the pump. There was some concern about identity. In order to purchase the Play at the Pump ticket, you also have to purchase gasoline, too. You have to have a debit card, and you have to have a Minnesota driver's license. Some of these out-of-state licenses will not work. We have an employee that has a North Dakota license or driver's license. Theirs will not work because they don't have the magnetic strip on the back. Only Minnesota works. And it's been well accepted. So if you have any questions...
Mr. Tatchy, we just appreciate you coming in and testifying. My apologies again for not recognizing that you were here. But we appreciate your testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Lincheski, you reserved a minute or two, hopefully not longer than that, at the end here.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair, for the hearing. I appreciate it so much. Thank you, Representative Schoen, and your comments, Representative Davids, as well. Just simply in closing, you know, members, as legislators, this is our responsibility to make this decision. We didn't get into the in any depth about the legal arguments of whether the lottery could do this or not, and I know people feel differently on that issue. And I, quite frankly, don't really care about that so much as what I care about is that we stop this now while we can. While it's affordable, our citizens want us to, and we know this. You know, we have had a lot of legislative discussion the time I've been here about the lottery, e-pull tabs, should we have a casino at the Mall of America, should we have gambling at the airport, should we have Racino, should we have all kinds of things. And they generally take years of legislative debate. We've not really had that debate. This was thrust upon us, and I think, members, we need to step up now while it's still affordable and while we're not addicted to this new revenue to make a decision for our citizens. And I hope we will pass this on yet this year. I don't have an interest in the competitors' interests who may want this to not go forward because they want market share. That is not my interest. I am not a fan of any of those competitors. It's nothing personal. Competitors' interests who may want this to not go forward because they want market share. That is not my interest. I am not a fan of any of those competitors. It's nothing personal. I just don't find that socially and economically it's good for our citizenry. You know, we as legislators, we ran for office. And unlike everybody else who has an opinion on these sorts of gambling items, we're the people who actually door-knocked our districts, and we know more than anybody what our citizens want us to do. And it is very difficult in my mind to argue that our citizens have asked us to go to online lottery gaming. And so, Mr. Chair, I appreciate so much the hearing, and I hope you will consider passing it on to rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. With that, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 2207 be referred to the Committee on Rules. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lincheski. And with that, folks, thanks again for coming in this morning. We appreciate it. We stand adjourned.